How do I look?
You look great. Welcome,
it's
Hannah
audio
Brock.
Only.
You look fantastic.
Aww,
yeah, you look good.
Thanks.
Yeah. If providing now all of our viewers out there can get a chance to watch us, because we're having a bit of a connection issue at the moment, but we're going to be on the sound platforms to let everybody know out there. But living in Saskatchewan, you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. You know this.
I know this, yeah.
But there seems to be a pretty good contingency of strength athletes up there anyhow.
There are pockets. You can find pockets of them across the country, because we have such a large landmass that and such a small population that it's, yeah, you find pockets of athletes in each province.
Well, what I seem to be finding out most about Canada, Hannah, is there may not be a lot of you guys, but you're all pretty damn good.
We do okay. Yeah, a lot of us, like, we produce a lot of pretty successful strength athletes globally, pardon me, in you know,
yeah,
weight-class athletes and Mitchell Hooper, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of you that come to mind for sure. And I'm friends and have interviewed quite a few of you that of the Canadian contingency, but we're here more specifically today to talk about, the little bit of the taboo of the industry. You know, you've been very transparent in your communications and your social media about performance enhancing drugs. And that's why I reached out to you. I'm not you're not a
started.
Great champion and all the stuff that kind of came along with that. But I think there's a lot of people out there that want to kind of hear, you know, kind of hear your story, and really because you're just willing to share it. Because as you know, a lot of people in the strength community, in the fitness world at large, are still sort of keeping a lot of the details to themselves. And there's not a lot of information out there that's helpful, that's really helping people along, because certainly we're not going to get it through medicine. So why don't you kind of explain kind of your coming through a little bit and then where you're kind of at now?
Sure. So I'll just, like, whatever, lay a lot of it out there, because that's the goal. So when I started using PEDs in 2018, I didn't have like a coach or anybody to guide me through the process. And so it was a lot of trial and error for quite a, it still is really, because you don't have any clear answers of what anything's really doing. So I went through a lot of trial and error to get to where I am today. And I'm very sensitive to side effects. So I spent a lot of time researching how to, deal with a lot of the more of like the androgenic side effects. I'm really prone to acne, and it didn't matter like what compound it was, you know, I'm just doomed. So, but I mean, that's maybe something I've accepted at this point, and some people might have to accept that too. But I kind of wanted to be more open about it, because I'm kind of shifting my own career away from worrying about competing at the highest level. Like, that's not my main goal. And my primary focus now, I'm more interested in coaching and helping other girls along their journeys, because I've kind of like, you know, I have ADHD, so all good things come to an end for me, unfortunately. I kind of need to find another way to, keep myself engaged. And I've acquired a lot of knowledge and experience in the sport that it's more fulfilling for me to share that now.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. I know a lot of people do. And, you know, it's kind of, there's a certain responsibility attached to it as well.
At least
I would hope so with a lot of athletes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you first started down your strength path, let's just call it that, because obviously you're a champion, strong woman at OSG, and you've had some success at powerlifting. You said you started your performance enhancing drugs in 2018. However, you started really the strength sports path a few years prior to that.
Yeah.
What was your mindset when you got to a point? Like, that's a big question for a lot of people. You hear that a lot. Where do if I'm going to go down that path, when is the right time for me to start? Was there a lot of thought put into it for you, and kind of where was your mindset?
Okay, that is an interesting question. I touched on it a little bit in the first video that I posted. So I was in a community of strength athletes, really talented and successful, strong women. The women were very, at the, you know, so like the 2015 to like 2017, the women's side was just kind of taking off. And yes. I was witnessing a lot of really successful women in strongman. And I knew I had the potential to be there. I had, you know, I'm a very athletic athlete, you know, so I just didn't have the strength, the brute strength. So that was kind of, I saw what I could do looking at how the women's side was taking off, and I knew that I could be there with them, right? So that was the when I decided to start using PEDs, was like, I know I can catch these girls, I know that I can surpass these girls, but I need assistance to get there.
Do you think when you were kind of developing that mindset and making that decision, were there benchmarks in your training that you felt like you wanted to get to first? Because one of the things that we see an awful lot of on the men's side of things as well is guys don't give themselves an opportunity for natural progression to take place. Did you feel like you did a good enough job doing that? And how do you approach that when you talk to people about it now?
No, I didn't do a good enough job. And I mentioned that in the first video that I made. Like I mentioned, like, I have ADHD and didn't know it. I'm a very impulsive individual. So, you know, impulsivity is, you know, one of the biggest factors in my decision making, unfortunately. Yeah. And you have to learn a lot of things the hard way that way, but it is what it is. And I'm learning to manage that better. So I definitely had room to progress as a natural athlete. But it was like, you know, when you're putting nickels on your lifts over the years, right? It's kind of,
yeah.
And when you have in your mind that if I just took that, you know, I could press that, it's an impulsive decision that I made. So I'm trying to promote less impulsivity and more, really think about the long-term effects of the path that you're going to take. And I want to lay out, the potential roadblocks that you can run into, the side effects, the long-term, you know, I want to lay all that out as my experience for other people, so that hopefully they don't make a lot of the same mistakes and decisions, that I made.
You know, it is very alluring to a lot of us, because we do see these athletes around us that we know, and we're not necessarily judging them, but we are noticing. We're taking note to the ability that is unnatural, that we know if we got to a different level, that is a catalyst to get us there. Now that you've kind of taken this step back and sort of reevaluated your thinking as you've gone through this now as essentially a pro athlete, I actually had a podcast today where I was questioning what is exactly a pro right now in our sport.
Well, I'd like to get in on that one later too.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute for sure. Yeah. Cause I'd like to get your opinion on that. So we'll save that. Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is like, what would you do as we start to talk about your journey prior to that? What would you do differently now? What's the first thing you would recommend kicking off this conversation to people out there, women specifically, as to what you'd have done differently if you could go back to that Hannah of 3-4 years ago and say, okay, what would you have done other than just sort of that sort of compulsive, if you could?
Yeah. So the biggest mistake that I made, and the biggest not mistake, but a big problem in strong women that I want to address, is that the progression of the sport isn't necessarily up to you like it is in powerlifting, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So like, we're going to Las Vegas this weekend for a powerlifting meet, and my total at this powerlifting meet, it shows up on Open Powerlifting, you know, and I can see my numbers compared to everybody else's numbers. But in strong women, nobody's putting this pressure on other people, but there's this pressure that, you know, the next show you have to be this strong, you have to be stronger. These are the weights for this show. If you want to do, you know, if you want to go do Canada's Strongest Woman, these are the weights, so you got to get there. So it's a slippery slope for impulsive individuals like myself who don't see the progression for yourself and more performance and comparative to even, you know, other athletes and the weights of the shows that you're looking at doing. And you kind of, and I think a lot of women get caught up in, you know, the next one, the next one, the next one, because that's the, how the sport is laid out.
You know, that is a great perspective. I don't know why I've never thought of that. Hannah, that is very, that's a very interesting perspective, because it's true. When we look at powerlifting and we look at, because we can compare the two sports pretty easily when it comes to competition, because they're so different. You're right. There's this different type of progression there, that it's you versus yourself in powerlifting, essentially. You're not changing your numbers all that dramatically. They are what they are. Whereas strong woman or strong man, even, because they fall victim to this too, I have no doubt.
Yes, of course.
In order to progress, sometimes you're continuing to push it, push the envelope to get to that next event, is essentially what you're saying.
Yeah. And I actually, I looked up just for shits and giggles. I looked up the, so in 2022, like the top three female powerlifters, the top three, so on dots, were, they only competed twice in 2022. Right. Whereas the top strong women, how many shows are you doing, because you have to qualify for the next one and try to, you know, be ready for this one. And, you know, so you have the shock, like, just as an example, you have the Shaw qualifiers happening right now, that, you know, the Shaw isn't taking place until mid-August. So, you know, are you competing in between there that you have to, that you want to perform well, right? Because you don't want to go to a show and not be your best self, right? So it's I think it's a really tricky problem. In, you know, and it's not like anybody's making anybody do anything, but it's just the way that the sport, it's the way that the game is laid out.
So essentially what you're saying is that it, by default, to some degree, again, nobody's problem but their own if they create it. But
I'm not blaming anybody for anything that I did.
But there's more of this. This a competition is more frequent. So that frequency then is in that preparation to be. I guess what I'm trying to say is to frequently prep yourself to compete. At some cases, 4 or 5 times a year.
So, and that's. And I'm not, again, I'm not like blaming the sport or anything. It's more like what I want to get across is for women to be aware that if you keep doing that, you're going to end up in a place where you're not going to progress anymore, where you're, you know, you're going to have problems. It may be alluring in the moment, right? You may, and the, you know, the sport, and again, I'm not, I don't want to make it out like the, because I love the sport, right? But I'm just trying to make awareness, and maybe by presenting, you know, some of what I think, maybe other people think the same way, and they can be like, oh, no, that's actually, you know, I feel the same way. The sport also promotes continuous, you know, improvement of the top athletes, right?
Like through social media. At a very quick rate, by the way.
So then that's, so that's like, I don't know, like, there's no way to get around it. It's just a, it's just kind of a thing that I think, you know, both men and women, especially like entering the sport, it would be helpful for them to realize that, it, you know, that's the way the sport is laid out, but you don't have to do that, because what's the payoff in the end? Like, and that's, and you, when I started, I said, I don't care about side effects. I just want to be the strongest. And, you know, here I am, you know, 5 years later being like, fuck, man, like, you know, was all that worth it for what? Like, you know, my shoulder's jacked up, my back is jacked up, my sleep is shit, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, you know, getting back to kind of the idea of competition, you're right. I think this is probably resonates or should resonate more with the newer class coming up, right? This amateur class that wants to just jump with both feet and, you know, in the fire and let's just get right to it and compete and get better. Because it's an old adage in the sport, if you don't compete, you don't get better.
Oh,
I don't
necessarily
agree with that.
Yeah.
That's not true.
No, yeah.
But it is something that's been sort of preached to everybody. Yeah. You got to compete to get better. You got to compete to get better.
Yeah, I think that was the mentality that I had when I started as well. But really, like, you look at some of the top athletes, like Melissa Peacock. I know she had some family tragedies, unfortunately, but her competition schedule, like, she doesn't compete that often. And look at how successful she is.
Well, I think that goes without saying with a lot of, if I think about a lot of the top pros right now, that's pretty true across the board. I mean, I spoke to Isaac and, well, Isaac had one competition literally the whole year. He still finished top five, for God's sake. I mean, it gives you the adage that you have to compete more to get better isn't true, for one. We know that. And what I think we see a lot of out there now is there's people that are smartening up to the tune. They're getting it. Certainly a lot of the bigger pros compete maybe two, maybe three times a year tops, where we see these mid-level amateurs chasing this carrot that I see 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 competitions that are running performance enhancing drugs and continuing to push that envelope, not just with the consistency of doing them, but the volume they're doing to get to the next show. Like you said, that progression.
And then when's an off season, right? So it's to have, that mindset early is not easy to have to figure out by yourself. So if you like, you need some guidance as well. And I think that's a big problem in the sport too, is that there's a lot of, you know, coaches aren't putting their athletes, you know, long-term health first. They want results immediately, because, you know, their portfolio, their resume.
Right.
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 So that's another bigger problem. You know, how do you vet your information if you don't know anything? How do you know?
Well, and where you're getting that information from, more importantly, and not to knock any coaches out there, because I'm not talking about anybody specific, but you're right. I think you're better off not crossing over the two. If you're going to be a competitor, you need to find somebody to coach you, and you need to find somebody to take care of your health.
Because to avoid the
complication of it, I think.
Like, we do this for, you know, how many years your body lets you do it, and then you're stuck with your body after, right?
Right. So when you got to that point where you said, okay, I'm going to do this, let's talk about, can we talk about that volume? Can we talk about what you jumped into and immediately kind of that, just, I get it. In the beginning, you were a rock star, right? I mean, you felt it. You felt this sort of like Hulk sort of transformation taking place. I mean, what was your mindset? How were you feeling? What were you using?
Oh, and I got fat too, man, because I was getting stronger. So I just kept eating and I didn't give a shit. I didn't care. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, I was huge, man. So when I started, so my first, compound was, you know, what most girls start with is Anavar.
Right.
And for some reason, and I want to talk about this in a video later, for some reason I have the worst side effects with Anavar. And
it's weird, yeah.
And you can't tell me it's not Anavar, because, you know, I've tried everything that, you know, Anavar's faked for too. And I've tried different brands, same results. So, and I've actually talked to a few other women, and I'm sure there are more out there that had similar experiences. So I don't know what it is. It's something to do with the way you metabolize it, or, you know, your existing hormone profile, right? I'm actually working with somebody soon. Victoria Felkar is her name. Okay. So after this meet,
I know Victoria, actually. I know
you
her
know lot. Victoria? Oh, excellent.
I do, yes.
Yeah, I'll be working with her after my powerlifting meet to kind of get to the bottom of a lot of problems I had, because so that was the beginning was Anavar. But then my last cycle with Primobolan really messed my hormones up for some reason. And we're not sure why I am, you know, feeling like a postmenopausal woman.
So did you get, so prior to that first cycle, did you, were you somebody that just neglected the blood work? I know everybody does it. So in hindsight, that probably would have been something you would have got a better handle on.
Yeah. And that's another thing I want to talk about as well is, so in Canada, you can't get private blood work. So, I think a couple provinces may have an option now that I haven't quite dug into yet, but in Canada, you cannot get, in Saskatchewan for sure, you cannot get private blood work. So I think that's a barrier for a lot of Canadian athletes too, is is your relationship with your doctor, you know, because I know a lot of doctors will not do anything of the right. sort, will not condone it, will not help you. I waited to see, and like, I don't know how it is in the States, but I waited a month for a referral to see an endocrinologist. And well, 5 minutes in his office, he didn't even open my file. I said, I want, you know, some more monitoring because this is kind of what I want to do. And he said, I will not help you.
Oh Lord.
So that's kind of, you have to, and you're at the mercy of the healthcare system essentially, because you have to wait for referrals to see these specialists. And, you know, I don't even know. He said he sent a referral to see a gynecologist, and that was, I don't know, 4 months ago. So,
yeah, I suppose that having the resources is so important. I think we take that for granted a little bit here stateside. However, I will say this: it's still not utilized like it should be utilized.
No,
I think there's this mentality of invincibility with a lot of younger athletes that start performance enhancing drugs, like it doesn't matter. I'll deal with the problem when it occurs,
yeah.
as opposed to let's just problem solve it now.
And I might have been able to, figure out something from day one that maybe I'm going to have way more androgenic side effects because of something, right? We don't know. So to go back to the blood work, it's totally understandable for younger athletes to be hesitant to have to go to their doctor and explain to the doctor what they want to do. We had, and the other thing too, I know a fella in Saskatchewan as well, whose testosterone levels were above they were within the normal range. They were low normal, will not be prescribed TRT.
Right.
Right. So it's not an excuse to neglect those things, but definitely in Canada, it's more difficult to work around it and try to figure that stuff out yourself. Like, and even when I've gotten labs done, you know, I've asked for things that weren't there and, you know, nothing was like thorough. So it's like, why?
You're hitting a lot of dead ends with that. How did you end up solving that problem? You have it, because you guys can't outsource. So there's just no, I guess, outside of like literally black market drawing your blood and sending it to a Titan over here in the U.S. Which I'm wondering if there's some way to
how can I ship my blood border jump? I think customs will be okay with that. I know,
It seems like they ship everything else. I'll tell you that. I don't want to
get trouble. Yeah, we can't get shit into Canada, though. That's for sure.
That's true. You guys do live in Canada. Let's not get me started on that rabbit hole.
I know. There's
pros and cons to a lot of bad. There is. And in fairness, you know. So getting as a woman, I mean, this is really kind of where the conversation goes down this path, right? Because it's almost been sort of, I don't know, accepted behavior for men to do performance enhancing drugs for as long as we've been doing them, essentially. And I get it. Maybe women have always sort of been a part of the peripheral with that, but it hasn't been in the forefront as big as it has been probably in the last 4 to 5 years, I'd say. I mean, maybe I was a little disconnected back even prior to that when I had my cancer and all that, but I just still think that what's been more recently, do you agree, that it's become more prevalent in women's strength sports, or has this really just been
like, you
really
mean The use of drugs?
Yeah, well, yeah. Maybe it's because we're hearing more about it, or has it been around as far as you know?
Well, I might have to make assumptions with that question, because like powerlifting, I think the drugs were there. A lot of you, if you look at a lot of the top powerlifters, they're also bodybuilders. I think there's more carryover of the knowledge from the bodybuilding world, and maybe you have more contacts from bodybuilding and jumping between the sports. Like, I think Hunter Henderson, Christy Hawkins, you know, a lot of those girls, Eva Dunbar she's at the biggest total in Canada and is a bodybuilder powerlifter, right?
Yeah.
But as far as I think strong women goes, I think that it's exploded because of the growth of the sport, right? The use of performance enhancing drugs, right? The sport took off, and then everybody's kind of trying to one up everything. So yeah, I think that's kind of, everybody's trying to catch up. Like you said, chase that carrot. Yeah. And you saw, you know, 2 years ago, I'll say, you saw how many girls that were getting close to like a 300-pound press, you know, and Andrea's done it. Victoria's done it. Summer was close, but then you kind of see everything kind of just plateaus. Like, from what I've seen anyways, like Victoria's a freak anyway. Right. Yeah. Like, I got no words.
But you're right. Across the board, there has been this quick sort of plateau. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think maybe the sport, like, it took off for 3 years but now it seems like we're kind of reaching the ceiling as far as maybe like max weights might go, save for, you know, the freaks. Right.
Right. And you attribute that more to just kind of this explosion took place, maybe, again, making assumptions. We're not pointing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but through the explosion of PED use is what you're saying.
I believe so. And, you know, social media as well, right, is a big factor in, you know, in everything. You're seeing what girls are doing, and men too, right? Like, I don't want to neglect that strong men also face these same problems as well. I'm just more focused on the women, just because there's nothing there really for it right now.
No, if you're a guy out there and you haven't reached out to these corners to grab your resources yet, you're just an idiot as far as I'm concerned, because there is enough of that information out there for us to grasp. But for certain, when it comes to the women's side of things, it is a bit new, more of a pioneered path more recently, simply because there hasn't been that information shared. And like you said, maybe in the bodybuilding world has brought a lot over to us, because of course it's been going on there for 2 decades now or better, at least in the women's side of things, to a really hardcore level. Mm-hmm. That of course then would trickle into strongman by default, or powerlifting by default, because you got crossovers there.
Yeah.
And then again by default, because strong women are in powerlifters start to cross over as well. But we get this trickle down information effect, as opposed to this sort of specific to what you're doing. So you're trying to grab this information in bits and pieces, where you and others like you now are coming out more and talking about it being transparent, which is lending to a more concrete picture about it.
Well, I hope so. And like, I don't want anybody to think that like I know everything, because I absolutely don't. I'm just willing to talk about it and, you know, put what I know out there and make the topic less taboo and kind of remove some of the stigma around it, in hopes that girls don't feel so pressured and they can make better decisions, be aware of side effects before they become more of a problem, you know, those kind of things. So I never want anybody to think that I know everything there is to know, because absolutely not.
Yeah, here's your right. I think we take it for granted a little bit that women have a bit more self-control when it comes to this kind of thing.
What do you mean by that?
At least us guys do. We always make the excuse, well, maybe women have more self-control than we do.
No.
But I would say probably not, right?
No, absolutely not. And I was chatting with a female friend this morning, and there's, you know, a lot of athletes are drawn to strongman and powerlifting that have, you know, pre-existing mental health issues. And I've talked to a lot of women in the last few years, like in Canada, like the top, like, sorry, I don't want to, but I mean, a lot of the top women have realized in the last few years that they have ADHD. And, you know, a lot of people with ADHD have addictive personalities.
Right.
Right. That's part of the impulsiveness and the addiction and the wanting more. So, you know, that's also a part of it as well, is it may not be up to you, if your mind is going to let you make good decisions or not. Like, I don't like,
yeah, you got to be able to self-identify maybe a little bit. Like, if you're going to, like, how do you control that? I guess, yeah, I don't know if you do though. Right. I mean, it's, you put yourself in this very addictive culture that we live in, which is strength sports.
Yeah. And it is addictive. Yeah. Well, so that's kind of what I want to address most, is that it a snowball, and the mental health side is, you know, pretty important to me, and the effect that these drugs can have on your mental health and stuff. So I hope that even just maybe by removing some of the stigma around the topic, women that might be more predisposed to abusing can think about things a little bit differently, and maybe realize that this isn't, you know, you need to slow down a little bit, you know, sport's not going anywhere.
What could we talk about your cycle then, compared to kind of at your peak? And you said you were doing Anavar, I think that's pretty common, right? And I'll throw some assumptions out there myself, and just through conversations that I've had with a lot of women in a lot of different lifting sports over the last few years, Anavar is pretty common. You hear that probably more than any other one. Of course, you had some bad effects from that. Mm-hmm. What was your dosing at the time? We hear like that 10 milligram a day mark, 20 milligram a day mark. Where were you at, and would you have done that any different?
Like, I actually didn't go more than 15 milligrams, and, okay, you know, split that. It has a short half-life, so split that every 8 hours to have, you know, even levels in your blood. Right. And so I wasn't even taking crazy amounts. Like, I've never taken crazy amounts of anything, but I'm just a lot more sensitive to, I think, both the side effects and the effects that we're after.
So
I used Anavar and didn't really care about the side effects that I was experiencing, because I was getting so strong so fast.
right
and that's a problem, but because I was chasing something that wasn't necessarily like for self-improvement, it wasn't for myself, I was chasing girls, I was chasing shows, right? I was chasing, you know, I was chasing weights, right. Yeah, and then the weights were going, so I didn't care. I used RAD 140, and
RAD 140 is a SARM. Yep.
Yeah, and I won't use RAD again. I haven't used it since, and I don't recommend SARMs, because we don't know the long term. Health effects of SARMs. We know that, you know, maybe an androgen is going to give you acne and maybe some more facial hair, but are SARMs going to give you autoimmune disorders, you know, other things,
well,
right?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, I'm an advocate I'm against SARMs as well, for that reason. And I think that's kind of an easy way out for a lot of people right now, for two reasons. One, it's pretty readily available and easy to get.
Yeah, and it's easy to administer.
Two, there's deniability behind SARMs, and I see that from a lot of people.
What do you mean?
I'm taking SARMs, I don't have to say I'm running. You know, it's a bit more deniability. I think I see it more on the bodybuilding end of things, and maybe some powerlifting and stuff too as well. But
yeah,
I'm with you on SARMs. I just want to make that point. But, you know, I asked you about the Anavar dosing because, you know, that's the first thing people would think out there is, well, she's experiencing these side effects, she's just got to be killing the dosage right now.
No, yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I have never done crazy doses, and I'm just trying to think. I've only used, like, three compounds together, and only for, like, the last month, like, four weeks. Leading in, right? So I've done, sir, it's your job to keep me on track with my ADHD.
Oh, I'm gonna try. I'm all over the board.
You're
right
doing
now,
a great job. So the first, I don't even know how long, I'm terrible at keeping track of these kind of things too. So that's another thing, is keep a log.
Not a good thing. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good thing. Thanks, Joe. Yeah. Keep a log of what you take and what the dose is, the right. length of, right. Cause then you can go back and refer to those. The first injectable I tried and was recommended, and I didn't know anything about it, was NPP, was the first injectable that was recommended to me. And it was the reason why this person recommended it was because it has a short half-life, right? It's and for women, it's, you want to lean more towards things that have a shorter half-life, because if you start experiencing side effects, then it's out of your system sooner. But NPP at a low dose, so at 50 milligrams, it actually, it, like, the, as far as androgenic side effects go, I was
that,
actually,
and that's a week, that's a weekly, right? 50 milligram weekly.
No, you should be like dosing something like NPP, like at least, you know, every 3 days, you know, more than that, like more is always better. More frequent dosing keeps your levels stable.
So your total dosing though exceeded 50 milligrams.
No, no, 50 milligrams a week.
Right, sorry. But over a course of every third day, because
yeah,
of the
yeah, whatever it was, yeah, every yeah,
right.
twice a week or so, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. So again, a very moderate dose. There's nothing crazy there. 50 milligrams. I mean, guys are 300 for God's sake. So yeah.
Oh, you know, Matt, 300. You know,
well, that, modestly.
Modestly, yeah. Maybe that's yes. yeah. Maybe that's an off-cycle dose.
Yeah.
For a lot of people. What was that? You recently had a clip I saw about, you know, if you're running 200, 250, TRT. 300 milligrams, yeah. that is not TRT.
It's not TRT. Yeah, exactly. Not TRT.
No. Yeah. Uh-oh. What else have I? NPP was actually the injectable that I stuck with most because I got really strong with it.
Yeah.
Like, duh. It's great for that. I'm just trying to think. I've tried almost everything, and I kind of have found what works for me and what hasn't worked for me, because I think I'm an odd duck where I am more sensitive to different compounds and stuff, right? Yeah. Where I read some things that some girls write, and like, I took this and didn't experience any, and I'm like, what? It's not fair. But yeah, like as far as like what kind of got me to my strongest was T-ball. I use T-ball short, you know, 4 weeks out, like 20 milligrams. Then that one's got a longer half-life, so you don't have to dose that one as frequently as Anavar. Yeah, NPP. I got some really bad advice once and used NPP up to 200 milligrams.
Oh, Lord. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot of NPP.
Yeah. That's a lot of NPP for you. That's a lot of sure. NPP. I mean, yeah, just a few hundred, even with me, it's not good. It's not. Yeah. First off, red blood cells go through the roof. And so, you know, not managing that hemocrit and hemoglobin. I'm not sure exactly for women, again, because this is new.
Things happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Right. Biologically, it's probably the same. But, you know, it's interesting listening to you in T-ball and in the MPP and the Anavar, and kind of worth noting, because I think what we're seeing now through this evolution of performance enhancing drugs amongst females is this sort of off the reservation, sort of not just with the simple one or two anymore. You guys are diving into this men's side of the drugs now, or what's been considered taboo largely for women for years and years and years. Now you're hearing of big testosterone usage. I've even heard of tren usage with women.
For women?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you see that? Do you see that as well?
Yeah. Like, and it's, and the worst part of it is I've heard some things where like, it's like their first cycle, like, because guys are just telling girls what to take, just take a lower dose of what I take.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Right. And like, for the record, like tren, not just for strong women, but for strong men. I don't know why you'd use tren.
Strong men.
I've seen guys throw up doing circus dumbbell for reps on trends. So
exactly.
Right.
A lot of it. Let's not go into that because
yeah.
I think misinformation is one thing, but you're exactly right about these compounds, and we're not experts, and we're not claiming to be experts out there, guys, about this. Take no information and apply it right now. We're having a conversation about this, but yeah, there's just certain things you scratch your head over, and that's exactly right. One of them, but it's also true too. A lot of what we're seeing, even outside that sort of trend thing, right, where the drug just doesn't apply. It's also sort of the type, not just the type of drug, but is because, I mean, we know that women have a natural testosterone in them, right? It's very small. It regulates a lot of your hormone. We've discovered now, I say we, right? Western medicine has discovered in the last few years. Yeah. Well, you and I did actually. in Western medicine over the last few years, that testosterone plays a big component now, as we know, in women's overall health.
Oh,
period.
Yeah.
And the fact that a lot of women were walking around out there not supplementing their testosterone at all and then taking all these androgens and expecting a better result, and they weren't getting it. Did you ever go down that path with any type of testosterone dosaging and had any type of stories about that you want to share?
Well, yeah, let me be like, since we're being completely honest, and I want to, that's what I want to do is, so my last cycle, we'll back up. So for going into OSG, so November 2022, there was talks of a big powerlifting meet happening afterwards. So I only ran T-ball for 4 weeks before OSG and a little bit of Anadrol, like a few days out and like the day of. Because I was preparing potentially for a big powerlifting meet afterwards. So I didn't want to be on a super long, and now unfortunately that powerlifting meet never happened, but I mean, that's, you know, so then after OSG, I wanted to do kind of a mini cycle to, you know, build some mass, cut some more fat, you know, retain gains so that I come in not a step behind, for the season, which, you know, everybody's going to make their own, you know, decisions,
right,
about, yeah, you know, when they wanted. Mm-hmm. But I ran Primobolan, and the Primo tanked my estrogen and my testosterone to the point where I was literally a postmenopausal woman.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Yeah. So, and I'm still dealing with that. And so now I am on a little bit of a testosterone dose because, right, in order to just like function right now.
Yes.
Right. And that's
yeah,
the reality.
In large part, that's why that testosterone dose is given in normal life. It's to fight that premenopausal hormonal change. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm looking forward to having this powerlifting meet done with so that I can, pardon me, reset myself and take some time off.
Is that a concern now with you, Hannah, is the reset, right? Because we know that sometimes we take a toll on our bodies and we get these hormones so out of whack sometimes that the reset really is never an official reset. It's almost there's still some compensating involved somewhere.
Yeah.
Are you generally one that comes off your, at least that after you started learning more about how your body was responding to things, do you give yourself the same advice you'd have given your younger self years ago to come off and to cycle your contests better with your cycles and that kind of thing?
Sorry, can you just rephrase the question? Like,
meaning that are you more selective in how you want to run your PEDs according to your competition schedule, or do you go into it more with an off season and on season where you're resetting? Do you have a pattern that you like to use for that? You know,
well,
like some people will do it in a block or something.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, I haven't had a very like structured journey. So like last year, like I wasn't on for like, actually like most of the year I was off after OSG for most of the, like the first half of the year I was off. Powerlifting meet, little cycle off. OSG, very little cycle off. Primo, fucked.
Yeah. Okay. And that's right, kind of where you're at now.
Yeah. So, and I, yeah. Yeah. And that's the, what I want to try to learn from my mistakes so that you don't have to make the same mistakes.
No, no, that's great. And that's why I love having you on, because this is, you know, it's going to resonate. I'm sure it is right now as people listen to this, because again, it's there's just a lot of unknown when it comes to women's PED uses, and it really is more beta testing, right? Because there's not a book to it, and there never will be. I think it's even true to men.
No,
that when we talk about dosing, we talk about usage, it really should be kind of adding to your experience, as opposed to just trying to come out the gate and, you know, just throw everything but the kitchen sink at it. Do you feel like you did that, or do you feel like you're doing that now, where you've slowed your roll down a little bit, you're understanding your body,
the drugs a bit more? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm no longer interested in, I'm not chasing numbers really anymore. I'm still going to compete, and I'm still going to use gear. That's not a question, but I'm no longer interested in necessarily chasing shows, chasing numbers, right? I'm changing my whole mindset around the sport, both sports. Because like I mentioned at the very beginning, it's more fulfilling for me now to share what I know in regards to the sports and, you know, drugs to try to keep girls a little safer. That's more fulfilling for me now than chasing big shows and numbers and stuff. So yeah, no, I've definitely changed my tune and realized that's not my end game anymore, is making it to the Arnold Pro, for example, is not right. Where, you know, even a year ago, post OSG 2022, I got second to Nadia, and I had in my mind like, okay, now we're gonna buckle down and try to make it to the Arnold Pro, however, you know, or something of that caliber, right? But now I'm gonna double down because I kind of had, you know, a bit of a breakthrough performance at OSG in 21. And then I unfortunately had some complicated life events happen most of 2022. So that's kind of why I don't want to say regressed, but actually I lost a whole weight class in 3 months, but
right.
Yeah. So I've definitely,
it all goes away, doesn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And more. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess to answer your question in simpler terms than I tend to, you know, give you. Yes, I am slowing my roll down and being more selective about what I want to do, because I'm doing it for me now. So I was concerned about doing the Shaw, for example, and I had submitted, I registered for the qualifiers, and I was just a wreck. So I didn't even end up finishing the qualifiers, because I knew that if I had qualified for the Shaw Classic, that I wouldn't give myself time to get healthy again, because I would only be pushing for the Shaw if I qualified for
right.
it. So I didn't even tempt myself by submitting all the qualifiers, because like we talked about, like that kind of addictive side of it, I wouldn't give myself the time to recover and get healthy again from where I am right now if I were to qualify for a big heavy show like the Shaw, because I'm not going to go there and not bring my best self.
Yeah. You know that, and that's just great advice too. I mean, or a great life experience, right? Because you just figured it out. I mean, cause there's a lot of us that wouldn't talk ourselves off that ledge because it is too enticing.
That's
a snowball effect at that point. Cause then there's no off time. There's no giving yourself a break. And ultimately that's what lead to these horror stories. Fortunately, it sounds like you, outside of maybe some postmenopausal hormonal changes that are kind of taking place prematurely on you, you've managed to avoid a lot of the bigger complications. Yeah.
And I've learned most in the last year about myself in regards to PEDs and hormones than I have, you know, since I started. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of that came from because I ran into a lot of problems.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, that's how we kind of figure things out, right?
Yeah.
That's the old trial and error.
And that's the game. And it's a like to go back, not blaming the sport or anything, but that's the the reality is, like you said, it's trial and error. We're beta testing this, and women, especially women's bodies and hormones, are so different from one another, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there's no one way to tell somebody how to take something, right? Because a girl asks you what to take, Anavar. Oh, okay, I'll take Anavar. You know, and I get bloated, I get oily skin, my hair falls out, I get cystic acne, right? I'm angry all the time, right? And that was my reaction to Anavar, right? But that's what girls should take, right?
Well, it's certainly more simple for guys, right? And not to oversimplify it, but it's an estrogen testosterone thing. Simple to navigate that if you have any brain about you at all. But you're right, with a woman, you're right, that stuff affected you like, you know, 50 milligrams of Anadrol would a guy a day or something, which is crazy.
Yeah, something similar. Yeah. 60 milligrams of Primo, and I'm like, we're competing on Sunday in Las Vegas, and like, I'm just counting down the hours until I can not lift heavy right now, because I'm just trying to stay in one piece until, and that's, so we booked this powerlifting meet to go back to like the addictive side and the internal pressure. So like, we booked this powerlifting meet when it opened, I don't know, January, February, paid for everything. So I said, like, well, let's just make it to the meet, right? But if the meet had been 8 hours away in Edmonton, I would have said no bueno.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes we put ourselves in that position, whether we like it or not. You commit to something, and
it's not a smart decision. And I'll tell you that. Nobody's a hero for pushing through.
No, sadly, there's no award for that at all. And we can keep our fingers crossed that the wheels don't blow off the wagon. A question for you, in thinking about kind of your health and what you were dealing with, because a lot of people don't take this into consideration. I do. Because I ran into complications with my blood pressure and my cholesterol, and how these drugs have effects on us that even as younger guys, we think we're impervious to that type of thing. And all of a sudden you go to the doctor's like, fucking walking heart attack.
Yes.
Diet, you said, wasn't a big consideration on your behalf in the beginning. You said you gained a lot of weight and stuff.
Yes.
I think as a woman, that would be a definite concern, simply because hormones play a big part in that more than men. What did you do differently? How did you start dialing that in? And did you have a notice of the change that the drugs were having on your body when you started kind of dialing in your health a bit more with your eating?
And in the beginning, like when I was eating everything I wanted to, like literally anything, I actually, over the course, I don't even know how long it was. It wasn't very long. But I went, so I competed when I was natural, competed as a power lifter at 84 kilos, so 184 pounds. And my heaviest weight, 242 at 5'4". I looked like a bowling ball.
Oh, Lord. At 5'4", you're 5'4", and you're 242.
Competing. Yeah, I'm 5'3" after squats. Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't do what I did, because I was only concerned about getting stronger. So I ate everything. And then, you know what? I plateaued and I realized, oh, I hit the point of diminished returns really fast.
Yeah. Where insulin insensitivity just killed you at that point.
Yeah. And it was pre-COVID when I started. And I lost about 40 pounds in the year 2019 over the course. I can't remember exactly. I could look at my fitness pal. It's the only thing I've tracked over this time. And have slowly kind of lost over the course of these, two or three years, lost weight, but have been able to maintain strength because of the cycles, obviously, in between. But I can't lose. I can't. My body weight doesn't change when I'm on cycle. I can't. I fight to stay in a weight class, right? When you're on cycle, and I think, and I want to address that maybe later in a video or something, because I think some girls look at bodybuilders that are on gear and think I can use that and drop fat. But there's, and it's especially like for me, because we all know that I maybe have more problems underlying than most women do. But the gear is not going to, you know, burn fat for you. Right. So I lost.
No, there is that stigma attached to it. It's like we all think, or I say we all, because it's true. We think, oh, we're going to run some gear, we'll just get tighter. In all actuality, we just push more pressure on our skin to make us look a little tighter, but
yeah,
not any more vascular, any more leaner.
No.
And as a result of that, it's very unhealthy. Yeah.
And if you're a weight class athlete, the scale's not necessarily going to go down, right? You're going to be putting some lean mass on. Sure. That'll help. But then there's also, like you mentioned, the insulin resistance factor, right? You're on gear, your insulin resistance is shit, right? And you're not going to. So I lost most of my weight in between cycles, like in chunks, right? And then on cycle would stay the weight that I wanted to stay at. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to take that into consideration for sure. And as a woman, that's a bit different. I think most guys would fight to keep the weight off running cycle. That's kind of an average thing for a man, is to gain that 10 or 15 pounds generally, which of course, if you're a weight class athlete going down instead of up, that could pose a big problem. That's where that eating comes in for sure. Mm-hmm. Did you really clean up your diet a lot?
Oh yeah. That was the question. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for keeping me on track.
Well, that's
definitely. Started eating like a pretty rigid diet. You know, same kind of things every day, like sweet potatoes, chicken, everything was meticulously tracked. Was how
I bodybuilder-esque type diet, essentially.
I did. Yeah, because like with you know, ADHD, there's a lot of that all or nothing mentality. So for somebody like me, I really struggle to wrap my head around a slow progression.
Yeah.
If I can't see immediate results, I don't continue with it. So, off cycle, a strict diet, tracked everything, and then on cycle was, I make mistake of, you know, overindulging on cycle because it helps with the strength in the gear, right?
It does. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, you get that insulin spike when you need it the most. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I love carbs. I'm about 7 pounds. Oh, yeah. I'm about 7 pounds heavy that I have to cut on Saturday.
Oh, that's
so fun. I just want to eat toast.
Well, you know what? What I'm really getting, a really underlying point that I'm getting from this conversation is going to go way back to the beginning when we talked about sort of mental stability and the addictive nature of our sport. And I think that it goes without saying, and I make the biggest assumption of all, that there are more people that deal with that type of, you know, let's just say ADHD, that type of addictive nature, than that do not. And as a result, we find ourselves in this, setting this trap for ourselves when it comes to training, lifting, and then, of course, competition and then wanting to excel, and then add performance enhancing drugs onto that pile.
It's essentially the perfect storm. And then the PEDs are just the cherry on top, because of I didn't realize the effects that MPP had on my mental health, you know, kind of, it's only after the fact do you realize, oh my God.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Because
you find yourself in like this weird place and you don't even realize what got you there till you're done with it.
And you're like, oh my God, I was a monster. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's just a great point. I want to talk to you about more of that in the future, because I really want to get people pointed in your direction. That was the point of wanting to talk to you today. I know we kind of skimmed over a lot of points, and I did that intentionally because you're putting on a great series on YouTube now that I want to get everybody blown to.
I just started, so it takes a while to make content, man. This is completely new territory for me. Yeah.
Living it, but your videos are much more detailed in specific conversation about specific points is what I'm getting at. I want people to get familiar with you, who you are, what you've done, and what you're doing. That way, they can go to your YouTube channel, they can check out these videos, because you're gonna have it broke down where you're talking about specific topics. Is that kind of the way you're laying that out?
Today I was going to I wrote some blogs first. That was like the first platform that I did, because I wasn't really comfortable just jumping into filming videos, because this is not something I'm familiar with. So I started
You're doing a great job, by the way. Just for the record, you're killing it today.
Thank you.
So,
thank you. Yeah. It just feels like a nice conversation with a friend.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah. You're a great host, so that makes it easier.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So the videos then are going to be more specific. How often are you going to release them? And then what type of content should we anticipate?
I'm going to try at, once a week, hopefully more. Today, I'm just going to take some of the blog that I wrote and put that into a video format, because I think that's more of an accessible platform as opposed to, coming to my profile and going through to the link tree. Right. So I think that's more of an accessible thing. And then I want to get into, in the beginning, more things for people that are thinking about using PEDs, how to make good decisions for themselves and educate them about things like half-lives of drugs. What's the half-life? So,
right,
dosing, how to dose properly, like things like that I didn't know when I started, but when I talked to people, it was like I was expected to know.
Yes, that's a great point. I want to hit that home right now. You're exactly right that it's taken for granted that a lot of us should just know that stuff. And I think because of in our culture and what we're a part of, sure, there are an overwhelming majority of us that understand what a half-life is and that type of thing. But ultimately, there's a significant number of people out there that haven't got a clue, and a lot of them aren't going to speak up because they get in that weird spot where they don't want to kind of be the outsider in the inner circle.
And that's okay. Like, I would never, ever expect or ask anybody else to open up unless they wanted to, and I'd be happy to share any experiences on behalf of somebody else, even completely anonymously, and I make anonymous surveys to hopefully get some information from girls that can share without any fear of knowing,
I absolutely love that, Hannah. I hope that really reaches a lot of women out there. That's great that you would take those consensus and those polls and stuff, because I think a lot of people would appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I need to do a better job on social media, that's for sure, of promoting those things. I'm not very, like, this kind of stuff is all new to me. The computers, the social media, like, I obviously have been on social media, but for more of like a business project point of view, that's something that I need to get a lot better at as well. So I'll try with that as well.
Yeah, you and me both. It's a big learning curve for me too. But in any case, I know you can get it done. Certainly, you are articulate in the way you present yourself. You certainly are very detailed in your description of things. I wish I had 5 hours to sit and talk with you, but I don't want to steal that thunder, because I already know what detail you're going to bring to us on YouTube through your new channel is going to be something that I'm going to talk about continually and follow. I'll be your first subscriber. If it's up right now, I'm getting on it. I think it's important. So I'm going to champion on this conversation and this with, and hopefully it resonates with my listeners to get out to see what you got going on. And listen, nobody knows best. Listen, you're a champion. You've been there. You have fast tracked it. Now you've slowed your roll a little bit.
Yes.
Where you need to be in a better spot, because we want to see you compete more, by the way.
Oh, and, thank you.
So let's get on this real quick. I want to talk to you about this real quick.
Sure.
So I did that thing today about pro strongman.
Oh goodness. I forgot about that. Yeah.
It's a great way to finish this, because I gave my opinion on it. What's your opinion on it?
I think unless you're getting paid with a contract, you're not a professional athlete.
Okay. And I kind of said that. That was in a nutshell what
I
said.
Yeah.
But the argument would be, if you ever got paid, then you're a professional athlete, right?
So if it's your salary, right?
If
I think the definition of a professional is, like you're it's your, like your living salary.
Okay, your living wage, essentially.
Taylor Ward, lightweight, very talented lightweight athlete in Ontario.
Okay.
Female, she plays for the Toronto Six, which is part of that kind of growing but small women's professional hockey league.
Oh,
right. Okay. And they recently won the I can't remember what the trophy is called, but they won the league, right? And Taylor, that's her full-time job, is being a professional hockey player for the Toronto Six, right?
Yeah, right.
I think pro really, and in Canada, I don't know really how it affected the sport in the United States when pro was kind of booming, but I know in Canada, it really It weeded out a lot of the talent by being a a professional athlete. You take that talent out of the pool, and now suddenly these professional athletes, don't have places to compete very often.
Yeah.
And now that talent isn't within the amateur circuit. So the amateur circuit, it just kind of gets watered down over time.
And if you think about it from a growth of the sport perspective, we can't remove the talent, because ultimately the talent is what provides the visual of all this. People want to see this. That's what they're going to gravitate towards. I agree with you. I mentioned that today because it seems like every new federation that comes up now in the States is giving away a pro card.
Yeah.
And they're useless. They're useless. They don't mean anything. You can't cross them over anyhow.
Yeah.
But you made a great point, though, and certainly a living wage is something that would be required to be a pro in anything. And we can argue those guys that World's Strongest Man are pros for that reason. They're all sponsored and or making money competing.
Yeah, they're not having to work a job to do it. My part of my opinion of it is it should not have been called pro. In powerlifting, you have elite totals.
Yes, so, you do. That's how you qualify for these pro meets, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe call it something else would have maybe helped.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, in Canada, what I've noticed is that every year you pluck the talent out of the amateur circuit that end up at nationals that win pro-ams, whatever, what have you. Somehow they get pro status, and then suddenly these athletes don't really have anywhere to compete within Canada anymore. Right. So it's kind of like they won great. They're talented athletes, but now they're kind of restricted to reffing at shows, judging and promoting instead of competing.
That is so true. And even here on the stateside, it's like, even at that high level, I mean, your only option is really the America's Strongest Man, right? Because outside of that, they're not even pro shows. They're all invitationals.
And so, that's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so where's the opportunity to compete at them? I get Brian does a great job allowing guys to qualify, which I love.
Yes. I think that's the best way to do it as well, is to qualify. Yeah. But
you're right. That's still not a lot of opportunity.
No. So I don't have any solutions to offer.
No, I don't either. I don't either. That's what I said on the show today. I said, I don't have any solutions at all, other than I'd like to just start with a clean slate, come up with another way to present this and call it good. So, that's not going to happen. We're too far into this shit.
That was what I wanted to see as well.
Yeah.
In Canada, we had a transition of federations where our federation, our amateur federation, dissolved, and it was now like we're kind of essentially like a sister to Strongman Corp. Like, we're Strongman Corp Canada, but every province is still. And I was hoping that it would be a fresh start, but it kind of did the opposite.
Yeah, you know what? I think the Europeans got it right. I hate to say it, but there's no organizations over there. They throw shows, they compete at them, they qualify, and that's how these guys do it. I mean,
yeah.
Talking to Luke Davies, a good friend of mine, of course, and
the chaos. Like,
there's nobody over here. There's no organizations over here. We, look what they've done with the sport. So you can't argue that success.
You can't. And in the UK, it's growing, and in Canada, it's. There aren't shows, especially for women, for like top caliber women. This year there are, I know there's one qualifier. Hopefully I'll make it to in July. And then there's Strongest Woman in Canada in October. Mm. Right. So, but that's only two opportunities. And if you can't make it to Westerns, you can't make it to SWIC. So,
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we could do a whole nother hour.
Are you going to be coming down stateside before OSG? Are you competing at OSG 2023, or do you even need to at this point? I mean, what does an OSG champion do? I mean, I've never asked anybody that before, by the way. Yeah. What do you do?
They come home and carry on the same way that they were before.
I guess what I'm saying is like, for a lot of competitors outside of the top weight classes, the supers, right, that kind of move on to, especially in the men's categories, certainly in the women's as well. Once you hit, that's kind of the top of the food chain, isn't it? I mean, at that point, it's, where do you go from there?
Well, like, you do have more, for weight class athletes, for the smaller weight class athletes. So your 64, 73s, 82s can, for the most part, keep up with the open, right? Like, there's, you know, you got the podium last year, Nadia, Ashley, and Donna, right? Like, anywhere they go, but for smaller weight class athletes, there are more opportunities sprouting up, like that professional strongman league,
PSL,
the women's 64 show happening in June, I believe, but
that's right.
Yep. Yeah. So for myself, like I mentioned, I'm going to try to get healthy after my powerlifting meet this weekend. And I actually want to, I talked about doing this before, but I actually wanted to try to cut down to 64 and see if that's a possibility for just a different challenge. And for myself, then, that there's not as much pressure to push as many performance enhancing drugs either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true, I guess. That 64 class is freaking amazing. Obviously, the 73 class is going to be the new darling soon. So
I think 73 has to grow for sure. Yeah, so I don't know.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm gonna go wherever the wind takes me. Hopefully, Nancy is back by, because Nancy should have won 73 last year at OSG, right? I would have had to have a perfect day three, and she would have had to really not do well on day three in order for me to beat her in a fair competition. Now, unfortunately, what happened wasn't a way that anybody wants to win. So I hope Nancy is back. She looks like she's doing well. So I hope she's back and can, get that opportunity again for the 73 kilo class to run away with that, like she was, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as what I want to do goes, for the first thing is to feel good. So if I feel good in time, right, then I'll cross that bridge when I get there.
Well, Hannah Brock, I hope you feel good in time, because you're going to be fun to watch. You're already there. You just retool and get yourself feeling better.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the schedule coming up, because I'm sure I'm going to run into you at some point. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'll keep up with your YouTube channel. I'll link that I'll link that to the show here, guys, so everybody out there listening can get that. Of course, I'll be posting things all week long about our conversation as well. And then in the future, what I'd like to do is do a follow-up with you. Everybody out there can hear me ask you this now. Do a follow-up with you in a few months, just see how things are going.
Yeah,
any
you bet.
New revelations, any new information kind of stuff, and we'll get back together.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I look forward to it.
Okay, awesome. Well, enjoy your, rest of your week. Happy hump day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Joe.
All right, thanks.